the music from Jurassic Park, if I am not mistaken. Lee Rayburn put that up for us, which is a good way to introduce us to our next segment, which deals with movies. Have you seen any good movies lately? I know our next guest has. Jameson Rabbit has seen over 5,900 movies, and if he's anything like me, that equals a lot of popcorn. Jason, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today, talking about summertime movies with Jameson Rabbit. Jameson's been hosting a movie review program. It's titled Real Reviews, as in R-E-E-L, reviews, for the past decade. He's also on the staff of the Wisconsin Film Festival. And as we move along today, I hope you'll join in. What are your favorite summertime movies? What are you excited about seeing this year? And maybe what do you look for in a good summer flick? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Jameson Rabbit, welcome to the show.
Hey, Larry, it's a pleasure to be here with you. What an intro.
I tell you, you know, I did some research before the show. I was wondering, are Wisconsin theater goers any different from the national average? And I found three things.
Okay.
One was affordability. Wisconsin has one of the cheapest average movie ticket prices in the U.S., ranking as the third cheapest for a single ticket and the fourth cheapest for a date night, according to a source. This is significantly lower than the national average.
That really surprises me, actually. I mean, because one
people
of the,
complain about.
Oh, yeah. One of the complaints I always hear is, well, movie tickets are so expensive, you know, blah, blah. But that actually surprises me that we are that low compared to the rest of the country.
Cheap compared to everybody else. And then passion for the screen. There was a 2020 study that indicated that Wisconsin residents missed movie theaters more than any other state during the COVID-19 pandemic. Suggesting, of course, a strong appreciation for the theater experience.
They must have called me during that survey. I concur with that 100%.
And then finally, and then we'll move on here, support for local film culture. Events like Milwaukee Film Festival have shown really strong attendance, and that demonstrates local engagement for diverse cinematic offerings.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Between, you know, Milwaukee Film Festival, Wisconsin Film Festival, even the smaller ones, we have a very robust film community in this area and an appreciation for film in this area, which is great. A lot of people probably wouldn't expect that out of Wisconsin.
You know? Yeah, but here we are. We're good moviegoers.
That's right.
I guess. Well, we've gotten used to summer being when a lot of the biggest blockbuster movies come out. When did summer become the time for movie blockbusters?
I mean, we are kind of celebrating the 50th anniversary of the first summer blockbuster. Set 1975, Jaws came out, and that was really the hallmark of. That's when a summer blockbuster was created, whether on purpose or not. I mean, there's a whole lore around the surprise hit of Jaws. But since that time, you can kind of mark time. Like in my head, I kind of mark years by what the summer blockbuster was that year. And every year there's one or two that are just standout big budget tentpole movies.
Yeah, it was Lee Rayburn and I were watching Robert Shaw, classic conversation, or not conversation, his classic comments on the Indianapolis.
Yes,
in the movie,
his story
Jaws.
About surviving the USS Indianapolis. One of the great scenes in all of movies.
Oh man! Well, what if so? Jaws was the first.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of recognized that was the first time a movie came out. You know, specifically in the summer, and people were lined up around the blocks for basically the entire summer. It was a successful novel, and people flocked out to the movies. And then 1977, Star Wars, and it just kind of became a thing then. And now, you know, movie theater companies build their schedule, build their calendar around when's the summer opening. What's going to be the big movie that opens the summer? And, you know, various weekends have been the tent poles for that.
Have there been some, I'm sure there have been some duds.
Oh, absolutely.
The big, you know, you're expecting a big thing.
I mean, notoriously, Will Smith for a while, starting with Independence Day, I believe in 96, Independence Day was a huge July 4th movie. And then the next year, Men in Black was another huge July 4th movie for Will Smith. And he became known as the guy who just dominated the 4th of July. And then Wild Wild West, the remake of the television series, came out July 4th and was a massive bomb and lost hundreds of millions of dollars. And was, and the studio, you know, part of it is the big budget for summer movies. Part of it is the money that they put into advertising and merchandise tying into it. And when that fails the opening weekend, all that money's tied up and you're never getting it back.
Why did that fail?
It just wasn't a good movie. Really. It's a pretty rough watch.
Well, and nowadays we've got streaming services.
Yeah.
You know, I'm wondering, do they target for summer too?
They do. There's a couple of movies specifically like this summer that are targeted for the summer blockbuster, as it were, audience to kind of get people talking. I mean, later this summer you have kind of a legacy sequel, Happy Gilmore 2, Adam Sandler's decades-old sequel to a modest kind of cult hit from the 90s. And now that's a Netflix streaming movie because Adam Sandler almost exclusively makes Netflix movies now. And that's scheduled for later this summer, and it's getting a lot of buzz.
I watched The Accountant.
Sure.
And then I saw The Accountant 2 just came out.
Yes.
And watched it. It was kind of a, I guess you'd call that a summer movie, huh?
Yeah, it's kind of on the edge there.
And kind of enjoyed Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
In that.
I really enjoyed the first one a lot.
Yeah, the first one was much better, I think.
I think so too, yeah. I agree.
Than the second one. Well, theater, let's talk about some of the trends. What do we got coming out this summer?
There's a lot, actually. I mean, it's a big summer. We've already kind of started Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
Final Reckoning was kind of the start of your blockbuster season, I think. I mean, that's a massive, massive $300, $400 million movie.
And I haven't seen it yet. I've seen every one of the Mission Impossible ones. I just haven't gotten to the theater yet to see it.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, I think that was the marker for, okay, we started big blockbuster summer season. There's been a few come out this year. But coming up, I mean, you played the music to Jurassic Park. Next week, Jurassic World Rebirth, the new Jurassic movie. And that's another one. I mean, Steven Spielberg is kind of like synonymous with summer blockbusters. He created the summer blockbuster, and Jaws and Raiders of the Lost Ark and E.T. and Jurassic Park. Like, these are all Spielberg movies that he put out right in the middle of summer to maximize profits. And he's not making this one, but the Jurassic franchise continues to be big business in the summer.
It's still doing well. They're still making money.
They keep making them, whether they're good or not. I would say I haven't enjoyed the last couple, but I'll go see this one opening night because it's a big summer movie. Why not? It's fun. It's dinosaurs. I'll get my popcorn, and that's kind of all you're asking for, right? Get in out of this heat, sitting in the AC.
Oh, man. So, sequels. That's Jurassic Park is a sequel. You feel like there's an over reliance on sequels and remakes, or is there some originality out there?
I think that for a number of years, studios have been really leaning on the sequels. It's easy. If it proved that it made money, let's make it again, whether it's a sequel or a remake. Just keep making that until it stops making money is kind of the idea. It does crush creativity a lot. This summer, we have a lot of sequels. There's a lot of sequels coming out and remakes. I mean, we Mission Impossible was a sequel. Lilo and Stitch, which is made huge. It's the number two movie on the year already. That's a remake of their Disney's animated movie. 28 years later is a sequel. All of these films, I love to celebrate original ideas. And it's kind of harder, especially in the summer. It feels like a lot of the original ideas are pushed to the fall, kind of the Oscar bait season, things like that. Yeah. Summer is for superheroes and sequels and explosions.
And I liked all those superhero movies, or most of them.
You got a few coming out this summer, too.
Yeah, a few of them coming out this summer. I've lost a little of their edge for me.
You're not the only one. And it's shown at the box office that, like, Marvel, with the Avengers leading up in making, you know, billions of dollars, and then since then have kind of struggled to keep their footing, and it's shown with the audiences have kind of, much like you probably, have kind of lost their way with it and said, this isn't what I'm looking for anymore. But we have Superman coming out in a couple of weeks. That's kind of, there's a lot of stakes on that because there hasn't been they're rebooting Superman once again with a new Superman.
But it's been a long time, hasn't it?
There was Man of Steel a few years ago. Henry Cavill was in it when Ben Affleck was Batman. and so they're trying again with the new Superman and kind of putting a lot of eggs in this basket. If Superman doesn't work, it could really hamstring those movies.
So are there some original films coming out that you think people should see this summer?
Yes, absolutely. This week, on the 27th, there's F1, the Formula One movie, from director Joseph Kosinski, who made Top Gun Maverick, stars Brad Pitt. It should be a huge success. It looks great. Whether you like Formula One racing or not, it looks like a lot of fun. There's a movie later in the summer, in the 18th of July, it comes out, called Eddington, from director Ari Aster, who is more known for making kind of horror movies with Hereditary and Midsommar. This is a kind of a small town sheriff and a mayor get into a battle in this small town that brings everyone in. Stars Joaquin Phoenix and Pedro Pascal and Emma Stone, and it looks really interesting, and it's not like anything I've seen before.
That sounds good. And some good actors there.
Yeah, great actors, great cast.
What about the F1? I have a daughter who's 21 years old, mm-hmm. and like in the last year or two, she started really getting into the F1 races.
Sure.
And then I read a piece or two about how it's people her age and maybe slightly older have really tied into that.
I think a big part of it is Netflix started a series a couple of years ago where you started following the racers and you get to know the racers and kind of the drama, and it kind of holds your hand as an introductory course into F1. And I know a lot of people that got into that and are instantly hooked that had nothing to do with Formula One 3 years ago. And suddenly, I think a lot of them came in. That was their entry point into it.
Interesting. Jay, I tell you what, Jameson Rabbit is our guest today as we talk with him about summer movies. Do you have a favorite? Maybe you've got a favorite movie of all time. Maybe I have a question about the movies that are coming out. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today here on WPR News as we talk about the summertime movies. You know, Jill Nadeau sent me a note. And we were talking about prices, and she says that you can, for a first-run movie in Watertown, it's $3.50 for a ticket.
Amazing. You can't pass that up. What else are you going to do for that?
For $3.50?
That's incredible.
So there are places where you can go and see a movie for pretty
catch
cheap.
Catch a movie. Wow.
Beth in Milton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Beth.
First-time caller, long-time Stephen King fan, and just went last night to see The Life of Chuck. I would say that's right up there in my mind with Shawshank Redemption and Stand By Me. It was such a good movie.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. Tom Hiddleston's new movie.
What's it about? Beth, what did you like about it? What's it about? What did you like about it?
No spoilers, but it just takes you through three phases of Chuck's life, and it's all in flashbacks, and it was a feel-good movie. It was a little ghosty stuff, but overall, it was just super, super well done, and just absolutely loved it.
Oh, Beth, yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Have you seen
Yeah, I just saw that. And it is, for Stephen King, you think, oh, scary movie, blah, blah. Yeah. But very much like Shawshank Redemption, it's a smaller story as opposed to a big ghost. I mean, there's no killer clowns or anything in it. It's a really interesting personal story.
And so that would
It's hard to talk about without giving spoilers, though.
Yeah, I suppose. And it's... But it's kind of an original. It's not a sequel to anything.
No, very original. Yes.
Yeah. So
good choice.
The Life of Chuck. Beth, thank you very much. You can join in too. 800-642-1234. You've got one you want to throw in. I want to go back to the Mission Impossible series. Mm-hmm. What did you think overall of the Mission Impossible series?
I felt like they got better as it went along. I mean, that's a franchise that's been going for almost 30 years. Started in 1996. And I was kind of in and out. I'd watched all of them in the theaters as they came out, but I was never fully hooked into them until maybe the fourth one. And then slowly started to really get excited for the next one and building up to this possible last one.
Yeah, they're at $500 million. Yeah.
Tom Cruise will always make a sequel to a movie. I mean, he's making a sequel to Maverick, which was a legacy sequel to Top Gun. He also announced that he's talking about making a sequel to Days of Thunder, his race car movie. He's never tired of making a sequel to one of his movies.
Yeah, and did you enjoy this last one?
I did. I didn't enjoy it as much as I did the last one, Dead Reckoning.
Yeah, that
from
was
a couple
really
years ago.
Good.
It's still a good time at the theater, though. I mean, it's almost 3 hours long, and it didn't feel like it.
Well, Tom Cruise has. I don't know how he manages to stay looking so young.
Yeah, there's a lot of internet theories about how that happens.
Oh man. Well, yeah. You think he's over with Mission Impossible?
I kind of don't. I kind of see him doing like Harrison Ford does with Indiana Jones, and when he's 80, saying, "I could do another one. I could probably do one more." You know, I don't think he'll ever truly be satisfied with.
Well, it's like the final reckoning. Yeah. So now, are we going to get the final reckoning?
Larry, I think it was 1995. I went to see Ozzy Osbourne, and the name of the tour was called the No More Tours Tour. I believe that was the name of it. And it was his goodbye tour, and I believe he's still touring right now, 30 years later. I never believe anyone when they say, "I'm done." No.
Well,
there's always a check being written that'll bring you back.
So, what's another movie? Oh, Karate Kid. Sure. Now, I heard that one, that movie.
Karate Kid Legends, yeah.
Legends has been a bit of a disappointment. Why?
Yeah, it kind of melds. So there was the original Karate Kid with Ralph Macchio as Daniel, and then the Cobra Kai series that's been on Netflix, really successful. And then, what, 12 years ago, there was a Karate Kid movie starring Jackie Chan as like the Mr. Miyagi type, and this melds the two universes, Jackie Chan and Ralph Macchio, into this new story, and it's basically the exact same story as the original Karate Kid. It is... I went with my wife and my daughter. They were very excited because they loved the Cobra Kai series, and they enjoyed it. I was horribly disappointed in the movie. It was not a big recommend for me.
Rebecca from Woodville emailed to echo previous comments. She just saw Chuck, Life of Chuck, with her son on Saturday. I think Stephen King's best work ever. Very poignant, meaningful, and thought-provoking. So
there you go. Two recommendations from your listeners.
What about Here's one that's Liam Neeson.
Yes.
Is taking over for Leslie Nielsen.
Correct.
In the new Naked Gun movie.
Yes, another legacy sequel to a movie that came out, a franchise that ended decades ago.
Yeah.
Shouldn't work, right? When they announced it a couple years ago, they said, we're making another Naked Gun, and we have Liam Neeson in it, who's spent the last probably 15 years of his career playing super serious, I'm going to go kill someone who kidnapped my family member. And I felt like that shouldn't work. But I saw the trailer for it recently, and it looks really good.
It does. Okay.
Because he's playing very straight, and everything else around him is crazy. And it's written and directed by the guy who, from the Lonely Island Boys, if anyone knows him from Saturday Night Live, good comedy troupe, directed it. And it looks like a lot of fun. I didn't think it would be, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah, it's hard for me to imagine him in that role, because he's just one of these very good... good at killing people, and
he was Oscar Schindler. And I mean, if you would have told me 30 years ago watching Schindler's List, like, that guy's going to be playing Frank Drebin's son in Naked Gun, like, what? But it works, and it's a sequel. He plays Leslie Nielsen's character's son in this one, and it looks interesting. There's a few of those legacy sequels. This, I believe, the same weekend as that, you also have Freakier Friday, Jamie Lee Curtis and Lindsay Lohan. The body-swapping Freaky Friday, which came out 15 years ago. They have another one coming out again. It's just like picking up franchises that have been dormant for years.
So I want to go back to superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic Four,
yes,
I think, is the movie coming
First
out.
First Steps, yes.
From Marvel. Is there anything new in this, or what's...
So, yeah, this is kind of a big moment for the Marvel Universe. They've kind of been setting things up. Thunderbolts came out a couple months ago and was really good, really interesting, kind of was resetting where Marvel wants to go with their universe now. And Fantastic Four they've made a few Fantastic Four movies. None of them have been successful, and they're trying one more time with this. And they've got a great cast, Pedro Pascal in this one, Vanessa Kirby, Joseph Quinn, Evan Moss Bachrock from The Bear. Everyone loves him playing cousin in The Bear. And Robert Downey Jr. is in this one, I believe. I'm thinking of a different one. But this is Fantastic Four is kind of going to launch where they're going in the future. And there's a lot riding on this one. Much like I say with Superman, if Fantastic Four doesn't do well, it could kind of hamstring them. I'm kind of dubious on how this is going to work, because it hasn't proven successful in the first three iterations of this story. But we'll see.
And after 20 years, we're getting another I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Right, another one, yeah.
Movie. And I've heard this one referred to as a requel. What is a requel?
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think that term, the first time I heard it was with, funnily enough, the Scream franchise, when they came back after a decade off a few years ago, where it's a reboot and a sequel at the same time. So they bring back some of the cast members. Jennifer Love Hewitt, who is in the original franchise, is coming back in this one, but they're also kind of restarting the franchise. It's kind of a mishmash to me when you're not quite sure. It worked for the Scream franchise. I think they've made three new ones since they requeled the series. I don't know. We'll see. I've watched all of the I Know What You Did Last Summer movies recently, and they weren't great back then. I don't know how good this... We'll see. There's a new generation, though, that needs their own horror movies.
The War of the Roses remake is coming out. What do you know anything about that?
I don't know a whole lot about that one. War of the Roses was a great movie, though.
And the whole business about remakes, is it because we're familiar with them?
I think that's a lot of it, is you've seen something you liked before. I mean, there's one later this summer that I'm really excited for. It's a remake. I normally am kind of doggish about remakes. Like, come on, we can think for ourselves and come up with something new. I've seen this before, but later this summer, there's a movie, Spike Lee's new movie, Highest and Lowest, which is a remake of Akira Kurosawa's phenomenal movie, The High and Low. And it's Spike Lee remaking that with Denzel Washington and Jeffrey Wright. And I'm very excited for that. And that's coming out the middle of August, kind of the end of summer movie season. And you're remaking a movie that's been 60 years since it came out. A lot of people haven't seen High and the Low. First off, it was a Japanese movie by Kurosawa. It's an older movie. So those, I'm like, let's remake it. Maybe that'll bring a younger audience to go, this is a remake. I should go check out the original. Maybe.
And what, I don't even remember the plot for that.
Yeah, I struggle to remember everything about it to explain it properly. It's been 20 years since I saw High and Low.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. It's great. I mean,
well, I bet it hasn't been 20 years since you've seen a John Wick movie.
I just saw Ballerina a couple weeks ago, the new John Wick spin-off movie, which John Wick appears in.
Is it similar?
It happens concurrently with the last John Wick movie. It stars Ana de Armas as Ballerina, who is working for Angelica Houston, the director. She trains her to be a ballerina and a killer. She's going out to avenge somebody's death, and John Wick appears and does his John Wick things. I mean, it's the same thing you've seen before. Lots of great fight choreography, new things. It's the first time I can remember ever seeing a flamethrower shootout before. I mean, it's interesting. It's shot. It looks great. I mean, it's very much a John Wick movie with John Wick in a glorified cameo role.
His movies, are so, he kills so many people.
Yes.
But it to me, the choreography of it.
It's beautiful.
Is amazing.
Yeah. Now, I was reading the other day, they were talking about John Wick 5, and he said, I'll make it as long as it's a good story, and we have to take my age into account now. John Wick isn't a superhero. He's a man. And he says, John Wick's an aging man, just like I am, Keanu Reeves. And he says, so if we're going to keep making these, you really have to take into account the fact that I'm much older than I was for the first one. And I've taken a lot of damage in these movies. And John Wick has to move a little differently. You know, he's not a superhero.
How much would he make? His movies always, I think they always do.
They do, especially the John Wick movies, yeah.
Yeah, the John Wick movies.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his number is these days. I mean, he's kind of a private guy, which is really cool. I really like Keanu. He's got a high approval rating with a lot of people.
He's a pretty good actor.
He knows what he's good at, and he limits. There was a while there in his younger career where he was trying things, and it showed the limitations of his range, and he made some rough decisions. And I think now he's kind of honed in and said, I'm not a thespian, but I know what I'm good at, and I know what people like out of me. And yeah, that's good. Not, you don't have to be great at everything.
Yeah. And that's why it was interesting with Liam Neeson too, because, you know, he was, until he made, what was the first one that,
Taken.
Yeah. That was really a really good movie.
Yes.
And sort of got his career going.
It did. And then he kind of just kept making that same movie.
Yeah.
Over and over. His daughter would get kidnapped, and it would just be a different title. I mean, three Taken movies, and then many movies, A Walk Amongst the Tombstones, all these movies where a wife would get killed and he'd have to avenge him. He had a certain set of skills. But before that, he was like a thespian. I remember seeing him, you know, long before that, he was a great, you know, up-and-coming, you know, actor. And now he's doing slapstick Naked Gun movies.
Well, it's interesting, and I've actually enjoyed his movies quite a bit. There's a new Wes Anderson movie, The
Yes.
Phoenician Scheme. Did you
Correct.
Mention?
That just came out 2 weeks ago. Yeah, new Wes Anderson movie. I really enjoyed it. I am a big fan of Wes Anderson movies. And I understand, especially having discussions with many people, that his style is very take it or leave it. Some people really don't like his style of filmmaking. I do. and I really enjoyed the Phoenician Scheme. We reviewed it on my program this past week. My co-host did not enjoy it. He's not a Wes Anderson guy, and he did not enjoy the movie, but I gave it a big recommend.
Is this targeted to an older audience?
Yeah, I think most of his movies kind of are, but he has a troupe of actors that follow him from movie to movie to movie. You know, Bryan Cranston, Tom Hanks, Scarlett Johansson, all these people, Bill Murray, they just kind of go from movie to movie with him. And this is, yeah, probably an older audience. I don't think he's trying to reach out to the teenagers that have expendable income during the summer.
What's the plot line on that one?
Oh my gosh, it's insane. So Benicio del Toro is this rich, ruthless businessman who's survived his seventh assassination attempt and decides, okay, I need to pull off my one last scheme. I need to reunite with my long estranged daughter. He pulls his daughter out of the convent he stuck her in, and he says, you and I, we're going to go and defraud a bunch of businesses and countries to get my one last scheme over. And so them and this guy Bjorn, played by Michael Cera, travel around, and it's basically little vignettes where they go to this business and they meet Bryan Cranston and Tom Hanks, and then they go to this country and they meet this dictator, and they're pulling little schemes on all of them to kind of tie together this one last master plan of his. And it's insanity, and it's crazy characters and crazy situations, and I absolutely loved it because it's not like anything you've seen before, which is great.
And not a whole bunch of people getting killed.
No, not really. And when it is, it's kind of cartoony. I mean, it's all of it is kind of very tongue in cheek, really dark comedy. Yeah, it's a big recommend if you like Wes Anderson films.
All right. Well, that I'm trying to think of other films that we haven't covered yet for that are coming out this summer.
Yeah, we also, let's see, what else this summer? You have Megan 2. Have you seen the killer robot movie Megan? Oh, no. Larry, you're missing out. A couple years ago, there was a movie called Megan about a killer robot small girl. It made a lot of money, so we got a sequel coming where she's coming after you again. Megan's coming for you. One that I'm really excited for later this summer is a movie called Weapons. Comes out August 8th. It's from director Zach Cregger, who made a movie a couple years ago, 3 years ago, I think, called Barbarians, which was the biggest surprise, like, great movie that I've seen in a long time. One of the movies that I went in not having seen anything, saw the movie, started watching it, thought I knew where the movie was going. It veered completely off from where I thought I was going and left me stunned walking out of there. His new movie, Weapons, is coming out. I know nothing about it. I'm trying not to watch any trailers because I kind of want to try and replicate that experience. And he has a lot of leeway with me on this movie because the first one was so stunning. So Weapons is one that I've circled on my calendar.
What's your favorite movie of all time? Summer movie?
It's tough. It might be Jaws. I mean, Jaws is one of my more rewatched movies ever. Jaws and Empire Strikes Back are probably the movies I've rewatched the most just because of my age. And it might be Raiders of the Lost Ark might be my favorite summer movie ever. I mean, I love these just big adventure movies.
Dan from Sun Prairie emailed. He says his local theater is running bingo.
Yes, Wednesday nights.
Is this a sign of desperation from movie theaters, or what?
I think it's just a way. You know, it's on Wednesday nights. I go to the bingo every once in a while out there at the Palace. Wednesday nights are kind of a dead night because the new movies come out Thursday nights and Friday. Tuesday night is cheap night for I think $6. So Wednesday's kind of a no man's land for moviegoers, at least there. And so it's just a way to get people in, and hey, maybe you'll grab tickets to go see the new movie that comes out tomorrow. And you might win some prizes. I never do. I go and just sit there and never win a prize, but hang out and get to know some people.
So what do they give for prizes?
Every week it's different. There's big prizes that you can win, like if you get bingo within a certain amount of numbers. Then there's consolation prizes that you get if you get bingo first. I don't know. I'm a perennial loser.
Have you ever watched a movie and said, well, that wasn't a very good movie, but I kind of liked it?
Oh,
and what? Maybe an example. Or
oh
two.
Boy, I have a lot of guilty pleasure movies. Absolutely, there's a lot of movies that when I review them, I have to acknowledge, like, look, this is a bad movie, but For some reason, I'm into it. Oh, trying to think of a good example is tough off the top of my head right now. But I'm a sucker for, you know, lowbrow movies. Usually it's comedies, too, where I'm like, this is a dumb comedy. This is really dumb. But it just it tickled my funny bone when I needed it most. Yeah.
How'd you get started in reviewing movies, by the way?
I mean, I've just, for 30 years, I've enjoyed just discussing movies. Got, you know, in some film classes in high school, really enjoyed sitting there talking movies. And then I started a podcast 15, 14 years ago, started a podcast talking about movies that spun off into other podcasts and spun off into the television program I do. And just kind of, it's something that I love. I love discussing movies more than critiquing movies. I hate being the film critic because I feel it's got a negative connotation. I really like just discussing movies with people and kind of giving my thoughts.
Have you ever given a review and then realized you were wrong about it?
Absolutely. I have given reviews and then rewatched the movie maybe a couple years down the road and said, wow, I must have been in a mood when I saw that movie the first time. That's actually a good movie. There's been those before. Yeah. Where I look back and go, wow, I was really off. Or I'll watch a movie and usually it's that I didn't like it. And then I'll talk about it with somebody else and they'll start telling me what they liked about it. And I'll see it in a different light and realize like, okay, maybe I went into it not wanting to like it, or maybe it stars somebody I don't like. Yeah, I can admit when I'm wrong. But I will argue with you a lot of times and tell you that I'm not.
Jameson Rabbit, our guest today, film reviewer, talking about summer films. Call in with your questions or comments as we move along today. What's your favorite movie of all time? Or maybe what's your favorite summer movie? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. 1234, or you could email us the email address talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking summer films today with Jameson Rabbit. It's great to have him with us today, and I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts, questions, or comments. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. He's host of the program Real Reviews. Great to have him with us. We had someone asked about Bill Murray's The Friend.
Oh, yeah, that was a movie that came out a few months ago. I believe it's streaming now, if I remember right. I haven't seen it yet because it kind of came and went out of theaters real quickly.
Okay, so it wasn't, in other words, it was not successful.
It was not a big hit, no.
And one I, before we take a call here, one that I wanted to mention was, what's the dragon?
How to Train Your Dragon.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Sure.
Now that one, I've seen the trailers. Mm-hmm. To that, they look pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, so this is a live-action remake of an animated franchise that DreamWorks made. They made three movies that were all great. I loved them all. This is live-action with, obviously, animated dragons. And I really enjoyed it. It's fun. It's a remake. It's been out for just over a week. It made $160 million in just over a week, which is pretty great. And part of that is summer movies. The kids are out of school. Usually the big successes are the movies that you can bring the entire family to. That's what made, back in 1982, made E.T. like one of the biggest movies ever, was the entire family's going to the movies. So you're getting ticket money from everyone. And we go see it again. And usually kids, when they love a movie, they want to go see it again too. But How to Train Your Dragon, Elio is another animated movie that just came out this week. Pixar's newest movie that just came out this 3 days ago as we're talking. Another one that's just filling the seats with whole families.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. And in the summertime, why not?
Yeah.
Take the kids.
Right. Get them something to do, right?
Well, it's kind of one of those things that Lilo and Stitch?
Lilo and Stitch, yeah. Yeah.
And what's that about?
So that was a Disney's remake of a live action movie that came out. Oh, I believe it was in the 90s. And it's a mostly live action with an animated Stitch. It's about this alien thing. This alien looks like a kind of like a koala bear that lands on Earth, and Lilo, this little Hawaiian girl, takes him in, and he causes all kinds of trouble. And I took my daughter to it; she absolutely loved it. It was a lot of fun for her. It's got a decent little story to it, and it's as we sit here, it's the number two movie on the year. It's made nearly $400 million already. It's been out for like 3 weeks. It's crazy. Yeah.
Well, so that's definitely not gonna stop Disney from.
No, this is their new thing: is remaking their animated classics. They mostly to what I think is disastrous results, but this one was pretty decent.
Yeah, Luke in Central Wisconsin, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Luke.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, longtime listener. I just had to mention Forrest Gump. It's probably my number one all-time favorite movie. I just had to get you guys' opinion on that. Thanks.
All right.
Ooh, one of the biggest movies. Absolutely. Robert Zemeckis, Tom Hanks, big summer movie from, I believe it was 1996. Something like that. Yeah, in 98. Yeah, great movie, right? It's funny. That movie won Best Picture, was great, won Best Actor, and then it feels like recently the internet has made an attempt to say, well, that was a terrible movie. It's kind of become an internet joke of Forrest Gump, one of the worst Best Picture movies. I don't see that.
No, at the time, I remember one of the things that was so cool about it was it was 1994.
Was it that long? Oh, boy, yeah, okay.
Was the how getting Forrest Gump in with a picture of President
sure.
Kennedy and making it look
pretty flawless.
So he was really there.
Yeah,
pretty flawless.
Yeah, putting him in all those situations. Yeah, it was a good time. Great soundtrack too. Incredible soundtrack.
Yeah, I enjoyed that very much. John wants to know, what's an underrated movie that you would recommend?
Right now? Underrated.
Or even thinking back.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say still in theaters right now, a movie that I really enjoy, one of my favorite movies of this year, is a film called Sinners, starring Michael B. Jordan in the where he plays twin brothers. It's a vampire movie, unlike any other vampire movie I've seen. It's one of the best movies I've seen this year. It's really good. It's really interesting. Brings up a lot of dynamics that you wouldn't get in a normal vampire movie. That's a really good one. It's still in theaters right now. I'm trying to get people to go see it as much as possible before it leaves because it's really an interesting movie.
It's
two twin brothers. It's set just after Prohibition. They come back from war. And they decide they're going to go back home to the bayou and open up a juke joint and live their dream and have a juke joint and something for their people in their little town. And of course, it doesn't go as quite as smooth as you want, but it's also vampires show up, but it's really a love story to blues music. There's a lot of great blues music. They want to open this up, celebrate the music of their culture and, some guys who have never died show up and start wrecking havoc on the place, and it's way better than just a vampire movie. I don't want to get too much into it because there's a lot going on in there, but it's great. And Michael B. Jordan playing twin brothers really flawlessly, much like Forrest Gump, where he got inserted into things. These two guys are on the screen at the same time, played by one actor, and it looks flawless. I forget that he was one actor at points.
Titanic. Somebody brought up here,
sure.
Titanic, and that was that a summer?
I don't remember. So here's the thing. I went 20 years without seeing Titanic. That movie came out, and I rebelled against it. I was dating my now wife at the time, and she went and saw it several times with her friends and roommates, and I said, I'm not going to see that movie. I know how it ends. I'm not going to some sappy movie. And it took me 23 years to finally go see that movie. So.
Did you see it in the theater?
I did not see it in the theater. I watched it like 5 years ago. I finally said, okay, I'm going to watch. For a big, on our show, I made it a big moment. Like, okay, if we get to this milestone, I will watch Titanic for the show. And I did. And good movie. Good movie. I was just being obstinate about it for the longest time.
Well, the thing about that movie was that people, especially young women, I guess, if I'm remembering mm-hmm. this right, saw it like six, seven,
yeah,
eight.
My wife went and saw it, I think, five or six times. She would bring her roommates and various friends of hers, and just over and over going to see it. That, I mean, it was the largest movie ever at the time until James Cameron broke it with Avatar. I mean, he just keeps setting the bar higher and higher with subsequent movies.
Yeah, I loved Avatar.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there'll be another four or five of those coming out eventually.
I didn't like the remakes. The first one was the best.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
Yep. Rob in Marshfield, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Rob.
Hey, thanks for the show. It's been fun to listen to. I just wanted to give kind of a shout out to one of my favorite books about movies, and it has so many great suggestions. It's called The Best Old Movies for Families by Ty Burr.
Mm.
And it is, the guy is a great movie critic, and each movie, it kind of gives an age recommendation. It kind of tells what you need to know before you watch the movie, if you have to explain it to the kids a little bit. Things you might have to pause button explanations. And then if you love this one, here's all the movies you want to watch next. And it goes from toddler up through teens. It starts from the silent movies up into maybe the early 60s. Huh. And it is just a phenomenal read and great movie suggestions.
And what's the guy's name again?
Ty Burr, B-U-R-R. And it's The Best Old Movies for Families.
Wow, I love that. Thanks for the recommendation on that.
I jotted that down. Rob, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Someone else is wondering, how do people see your show or hear your show?
Sure. I mean, locally here in Madison, where I'm at, I'm on the local KSUN channel. Listen to it on 103.5 FM here. But I also put it up on YouTube. It's Real Reviews TV. If you search Real Reviews TV on YouTube, you'll find it. And I'm also on Facebook and Instagram under the same title, Real Reviews TV, and post links to the show every week. We've been going now for 11 years.
So it's been has to have been successful.
Yeah, it's great. We went 10 years where I did every single week for 10 years, never missed a week. It was 500 and some episodes in a row. And then I took a little break, and now we are a monthly program because the schedule got to be too much. But I would watch. I still watch 500-600 movies a year, but it got to be a little hectic every single week.
I don't know how you would,
because you have to watch all the movies, make notes for all the movies, and then do the show and talk about the movies, which was the best part, but yeah, it got to be a little much.
Well, you know, I was thinking about how many books that I do in the course of a year for the show, and it's a little, it's 50-some books.
Sure.
So it's
one
about a book a week.
Yeah.
And you read the book, you take notes.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes a bit of work. So.
It does. Yeah, just the prep. Yeah. Impressive.
I tell you what, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. This has been great.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us today. I'll see that final Mission Impossible.
There you go.
thanks a lot for being with us today. A lot of fun. Jameson Rabbit hosts the movie review program Real Reviews, and it's also available on YouTube channel and a whole lot of other places, as he's mentioned. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you'll stay with us. We got lots of good things coming up, and we've got a great staff. Joel Patnaw and Clara Neipert, our producers, Jill Nadeau, our executive producer, Lee, Jeff Robbins, our producer, our technical director, as well as is Lee Rayburn. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us. Lots more in store.